Back on the Fan Morning Show, Justin and Aylin. Of course, I'm 590 The Fan. I know I was giving your father birthday celebration wishes this morning, but I told you I was going to look to see who else was born on September 20th. Captain John Tavares shares a birthday with your very own Chris Cuthbert.
Wow.
It's a big
birthday
day.
Birthday celebration. I wonder if there'll be... Well, they're talking about beers now. Maybe there'll be beers down there.
Maybe there's beers down there. Bobrovsky's birthday today.
Okay.
Guy Lafleur and Ryan Hartman. Those are your top four NHL
group.
Names. Pretty good. And Chris Cuthbert. So happy birthday, CeCe.
A second happy birthday. That's too many.
He might have missed my initial one. So I want to make sure that he's getting an 8 o'clock shadow as well.
It's probably a good chance.
All right. Blue Jays game two against the Yankees tonight at Yankee Stadium. And our guy that's down there in New York, our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Dan Shulman, Blue Jays play-by-play announcer at Sportsnet. Did you get 14 hours of sleep before you joined us? I don't think that is physically possible with the 8 a.m. call.
You know what? I've never been more impressed with someone and angry at someone in my entire life than when I read that. Like, I would take 14 over two, never mind in one. God bless him. I'm so happy for him, but I don't know how he said, I wasn't there. That's a post-game, scrum, and I wasn't there. I don't know how you say that with a straight face. I only got 11 hours. I've never said the sentence, I only got 11 hours sleep last night.
You're
Who
preaching
says that?
To the choir. We know
Yeah, seriously. You guys know better than anybody.
Yeah, we're definitely hoping to average half of what you say is getting before a start. We need like a full, like this is the perfect content opportunity, I think, for our team, of course, anyone covering the Blue Jays. Like detail everything that goes into a pre-game sleep for Yusei Kikuchi. It's going to be the best thing I think we've read about the Blue Jays all year.
Yeah.
So what do you need before a work day, Dan? Is there something that, like, because 14 hours of sleep, I mean, you can't get 14 hours of sleep, but do you need something before a work day?
So I will tell you, and I don't say this with any pride, I'm a little older than I used to be, so my routine has changed a little bit. Whether I want to or not, excuse me, I wake up at like 6 in the morning. I don't know why. I did today. Didn't get back from the ballpark till like 11, 11:30. Get to sleep at like midnight, whatever. I'm sorry. And I wake up at 6. So there's an excellent chance if you're looking for me between like 12:30 and 2 today, my phone will be on silent. I now incorporate occasionally a little daytime nap so I have peak energy for a ball game at night.
Okay, so it'll be a bit of quiet in the hotel room for Dan, a little quiet at Yankee Stadium because this Yankees team is not giving its fan base much to cheer about. Is it weird being at Yankee Stadium when it feels like the performance of the home team means absolutely nothing?
It was strange. Buck and I said on the air to each other and off the air to each other, we've never been at Yankee Stadium where it felt like that. It felt not quite like a spring training game in Tampa, but it just felt like it was earlier in the season and a getaway day, and people just kind of wanted to go through the motions and get it over with. They announced 38,000. There was not close. Like
no
maybe,
way.
Yeah, maybe 25, 20, like it wasn't 10, but maybe 25,000 or something like that. And it's a Tuesday night in September, and the team's not really in the race, and I get it. But the Yankees, even in their bad years, they usually go right down to the wire and it's meaningful games and there's always a buzz. There was no buzz, nothing last night. And you know how there have been Blue Jay games where it's like 4-1 for the other team and you feel like it's over, they can't come back? Like last night was 4-1 for the Blue Jays and you kind of felt it was over. Certainly once they got through that top of the order for the third time, got through Judge for the third time. It was strange. I didn't sense anger, and I've been at Yankee Stadium a lot where there's been loud booing and anger. That was reserved last night for Giancarlo Stanton, and it wasn't super loud. It was more like, come on, man. There was just no emotion in the ballpark, and we were a little worried, like, if the Blue Jays would play down to that emotional level because there was no vibe in the ballpark. It doesn't hurt when your leadoff guy hits a home run, right, to start the game, and I thought they played a very clean, smart, well-rounded game. The pitching was good, the hitting was good, the defense was excellent, and they just came in and took care of business.
Yeah, a weird vibe. I think it's been all year long for baseball in the state of New York in general, but maybe seeing the Yankees down this stretch is a good thing. We circled this at the beginning of the season when we looked at the way the Blue Jays wrapped up their entire calendar with a lot of AL East, and we were a little worried about running the gauntlet against some of these big names, but they sweep the Red Sox. They've got two series left, another one with the Yankees and then the Rays, and there's a potential that the Rays might not be playing for anything if they are able to clinch. It kind of makes this stretch look very favorable for the Blue Jays if they can continue with some momentum.
Isn't it amazing how quickly things can change in a long season? Like, hey, this looks great. Texas is coming in, biggest series of the year. If they take three out of four, and then, whoa, and they lose all four, and now it's bleak, and they have no chance, and now things are a lot better. And part of it is that until last night, Seattle and Texas had been losing and losing and losing. But it's amazing how much has changed in just a few days. And in terms of the American League East thing, they have played better against the East. And it's one of those things like runners in scoring position. Just because they haven't done it doesn't mean they won't do it. Like, just because they haven't played well against the East doesn't mean they can't play well against the East. And, you know, the Yankees are a fundamentally different team now than they were in April and May when the Blue Jays saw them. And the Blue Jays are, too. Like, who among us would have thought Biggio and Schneider would hit 4 or 5 for this team? None of us, you know, nobody even really knew who Davis Schneider was in April and May. And here he is, you know, in the middle of the lineup. But I think you make a great point, Ailish, in that the last three games, this is one of those sneaky other things that people should root for. Root for Baltimore to win. Root for Tampa Bay to lose. Root for Tampa Bay to not be fighting for a division title. Obviously, they will be this weekend, but root for them not to be fighting for a division title next weekend. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of careful what you wish for, but maybe they rest some guys and you know, don't use all of their starting pitchers and so on. And those last three games could still mean everything to the Blue Jays. So the more that is decided by then, the better.
What has been the most surprising development for you over the last 7 or 8 days or so? I mean, this getting swept by Texas and having every result go your way over the weekend. Now the victory over the Yankees, probably not all that surprising, giving the Blue Jays are a better team right now than the New York Yankees. But in terms of how the tables have turned, like, what is not making sense to you? Is it the fact that the Blue Jays were able to bounce back as they did, that Texas couldn't carry momentum, that Houston looks pedestrian right now, or at least not on Baltimore's level, that Seattle can't get it going? Like, everything's working or has worked the last couple of days in the Blue Jays' favor, and a lot of it doesn't make all that much sense to me.
Right, yeah. You know what? It's good you've learned that. Baseball's not supposed to make sense. Other things can make sense. I've been doing this a long time. I still have no idea what's going on half the time, but I think there are two things. One is the out-of-town scoreboard, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's those three teams. If I'm not mistaken, Houston, Seattle, and Texas are 4-11 combined since the end of that Blue Jay series with Texas. That is an immense amount of help on the out-of-town scoreboard, especially with, like, Seattle lost a game to Oakland and Houston lost two games to Kansas City. It easily could have been 11-4, but it's 4-11. And that is a huge part of the math here, why things look so much better for the Blue Jays. You give each of those teams one or two more wins and we're having a different conversation. Here's the other thing. So that's the baseball gods smiling on the Blue Jays from afar. The other thing is, and I won't be able to tell you the exact game for all of them, but there have been, three check swing calls that could have gone the other way on the Blue Jays in the last week that went their way. And after that, each time a big hit happened, I think if I'm not mistaken, Chapman had one on the triple that won the game on Sunday. There was one last night, and my memory is so bad. I'm sorry, guys. You'll see when you're older. There was one last night that there was one on Springer last week, mm-hmm. and then he got a big hit. And there was one last night, and it might have been, I think it was the Kirk home run. Yeah, it was the where he had a check swing. Remember the at bat? We kept him. You guys might have been sleeping. I don't know, but he kept trying to get the runner over. He was doing everything he could. He had a check swing call that put it to 3-2, and then he homered. Like, this is the kind of stuff where it seems like, or you certainly notice more when it goes against your team. And I think both the out-of-town scoreboard and the check swing gods have both been very much on the Blue Jays' side the last couple of weeks. So, you know, it's nice to see that sort of thing every now and again.
Yeah, it's nice when you get the bounces here and there. I think that helps with the entire just vibe and the energy going into what's a big stretch here, knowing that sometimes things are working out for you. We're talking about Dan Shulman. I was going to talk about Kevin Biggio in the cleanup spot. I mean, it's kind of a conundrum. You know, I don't think Kevin Biggio was someone we circled for the cleanup spot ever in this projection of this series or this season, but he's doing pretty well in the last month or so. I think a testament to John Schneider for really believing in Kevin Biggio and giving him opportunities, but he's certainly earned a spot in the lineup wherever he can be fit. What have you liked best about Biggio just down the stretch, being able to help this team both defensively and offensively?
Yeah, literally everything. So let's start with defense. You know, mostly a second baseman. We've seen him play first, and he did that last night. We've seen him play right, and he's done that. And then he filled in at third when Matt Chapman was on the IL. The last time Chapman was at third base was a couple of years ago, and it didn't go well. And as he reminded me when I asked him about it last week, that was the year where he had not one, not two, but three different injuries to his right hand or fingers on his right hand, including a fracture. And he said it really impacted his throwing. He looked fine at third. He's not Matt Chapman, but he looked fine at third, and he certainly looks fine at second, first, and right. And it's so important because now Schneider can DH or be at a different spot, or Merrifield can be here or there. You can do the Varsho Kiermaier thing. You know, you can do a million different things because Biggio is able to play, it appears now, four positions. So I think that's huge. He's a very good base runner. We know that. The more he's on base, the more that helps. But the offense has been a revelation going back really to like June or something like that after a very, very slow start to the season. Like you started to wonder, and all you have to do is a couple of months ago was go on Twitter and type into the search bar Biggio and you would find out how people felt about him because he's been kind of a polarizing guy and a lightning rod for the fan base. And people were like, get rid of him, DFA him. Why does Schneider love him so much and that sort of stuff? But I give him a lot of credit for just continuing to go out and do his work, even if he was playing once or twice a week, to wait for his opportunity and then to make the most for it. In terms of the cleanup spot, you know, like we said, like this is the last thing that you would have expected. I think batting order spots are looked at a little bit differently last night. And last night on the air, right after I made a big deal about it, I said, well, we shouldn't make a big deal about it, but I just had. But like easily he could have been second and then Bichette third and Vladdy fourth. And nobody would have batted an eye, and that would have been a, quote, more traditional look, you know, with him in the two spot. But I think all they're doing is they're putting their hottest hitters or their best hitters up as close to the top of the lineup as they can to get them up as many times as they can. And I think they want Springer, Bo, Vlad, 1-2-3. Now, it could change tonight. Vlad did not look good last night, did not look good running at all, and we'll find out today if there's something going on. But you know, at this point, as far as I know, the Blue Jays are only going to see right-handed starting pitchers the rest of the regular season against the Yankees and Rays. I might be wrong there. But if that's true, I mean, Cabin's going to have to hit his way out of the lineup right now. I think you guys would agree with me. The way it looks right now, he's going to be in there every game.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it seems like he's caught a moment here, or at least caught, you know, a section of a schedule of a career where he just looks like he's going to help you every night. And that's sort of the thing. It's like, you know, it's the conversation now. We got to find a way to get that bat in the lineup and the creative means in which to do that. Now it's like, can we have creative means to get Kevin Biggio in the lineup or keep him in the lineup to make sure that no one else is getting their job taken away from him? Because he's kind of been that valuable. It seems like one of his great intangible is that every night he finds a way, or at least on this run, he finds a way, whatever it is, to help the team win a ballgame with a play that maybe not is made by whoever might also be in that position. It just seems like Biggio has that in that winning intangible right now, which is obviously something that's hard to describe, but it feels like we're in a position where you just have to find a way to utilize him.
Yeah, well, so offense gets the headlines because that's the first thing that everybody looks at. But even let's just talk about defense again, and we touched on it before. And he's not a Gold Glove winner. He's never going to be a Gold Glove winner in any spot. But remember the play at third base where he tags the runner and completes the double play. Remember the play when he's playing second base a couple of weeks ago and he gets a four unassisted double play at first base. Remember that ground ball over towards first base? And yep, he just ran and got it and tagged the runner and then stepped on first. Very unusual play. Remember the play a couple of days ago when he's playing second, backhanded flip out of the glove to Bichette at short to force a runner there. He scooped a throw. Matt Chapman kind of pulled a throw last night, and Biggio scooped it. He's made a diving catch in right field in the last few days. Like, you're right. He is finding a way to impact the team positively every single game. And again, just the fact that they have comfort with him at four positions gives them the versatility to say, okay, who do we want in the lineup tonight? Out of these other four guys, we can fit two of them in. Let's put the two in that we want. And whatever the hole is, that's where Biggio goes. So, and, you know, maybe he'll sit a game, but they don't want guys to sit forever. Like, Whit Merrifield's not going to sit for the next 11 games. You know, Schneider will get a day off here and there. And it all depends on how he's hitting too. Maybe Chapman gets a day off. Maybe Springer gets a DH day, and that allows them to move people around. I'm sure they'd love to get Horwitz in the lineup once or twice if they can. It's funny because they're not an offensive juggernaut by any stretch of the imagination, although last night was good. But they do have more guys than spots right now. And, you know, like I don't know about tonight, but I'm expecting to see Whit Merrifield in there against Gerrit Cole. Maybe that's a night where they say to Davis Schneider, not your best matchup, 97 fastball, hard slider, down and away. Let's let Whit have this game. So, and the nice thing, too, is I think the bench is stronger as a result because you've got more guys rotating in and out of the lineup. If you're bringing Merrifield off the bench to pinch hit, you're okay with that. As we've seen in recent weeks, if you're bringing Espinal off the bench to pinch hit, he's done a really nice job doing that the last few weeks. And I think for Espinal and now for Biggio as well, the more you play, the better you play. So I think it's nice that they kind of have a lot of moving pieces on this roster now.
If we're talking about nice defensive plays, how about that beautiful double play, Bichette to Schneider to Guerrero? I know it was Stanton running that one out, and he's not the fleetest of foot, but that was a beautiful play, and it's great to see Bo Bichette back in the lineup and also contributing defensively and at the plate as well with his home run last night.
Yeah, so seeing the walk in the first inning was really good. He doesn't walk much, and usually when he walks, that means the process is good and he's not going to chase too much. The single in the second plate appearance was a hard line drive to left, and then the home run was vintage Bo Bichette, right? Mm-hmm. So that's great because they need all the offense they can get, and if Bo can get on a heater like he was for the first 3-4 months of the season, that would be huge for them. The defense is one of those things that hasn't been talked about nearly as much as maybe it should have been, and I'm guilty of that as well. You know, it's something that got talked about more the last couple of years when it wasn't going well than it is now when it is going well. Raw errors are not, you know, the most accurate statistic always, but 24 2 years ago, 23 last year, 8 this mm-hmm. year. Not quite as many innings, you know, because he's been on the IL a little bit. But, you know, still, if it's 10 or 11, like, he's still way down from last year. And I thought in the moment when the ball was hit, I thought he's going to third base. Just take the out at third. The only reason to go to second is because you think you can turn a double play. And this is the first thing I'm going to ask him today when I see him. The only reason to go to second is if you think you can turn a double play. The only reason you can think you can turn a double play is because in the moment, while trying to field a very difficult ground ball, you have also said to yourself, it's Stanton, and I think we can get him. Because they barely got the runner at second. Like, it was bang-bang at both bases, really. And I give him a lot of credit for having the confidence to try that play. He was right on the money with his flip. Like, a bad throw, that ball goes into right field. They don't get anybody in at second and third. So he's in a good place. Remember the throw home back on the homestand a couple of days ago where they cut down the runner with the plate. Again, that's a confidence play. You don't try. The infield was back. He wasn't supposed to be throwing home. He elected to throw home. If he throws across to first, nobody says anything, and the run comes in to score. So I think he's showing in a lot of ways that he's got confidence defensively now, too.
Maybe it's time for another Bo-tober around the corner, Dan.
Sure. So
things are looking up. Things are looking up. We appreciate you coming on this morning. Not on 14 hours of sleep, but nonetheless, always excellent. And get a good nap in today. We appreciate it, Dan.
I plan on it. Thanks, guys.
That's Dan Shulman, Blue Jays play-by-play announcer at Sportsnet, and our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
Yeah, we need that Yusei Kikuchi story. I feel like it's going to bother me irrationally for, like, every time I see him now. Like, it's changing my entire opinion on the guy. I still love the guy, but now I'm just immensely jealous.
It might be the most popular tweet right now. Caitlin McGrath's tweet is getting quote tweeted by everyone saying, mood, same, vibes, I relate to Kikuchi. And I'm like, I'm the opposite.
Mood,
would be
same,
nice.
Vibes is very
would
funny.
Be nice. Like, couldn't relate less to someone. Kikuchi, if you missed it, said that one of the reasons he might have not had the best start or the injury was... The injury to his trap muscle.
A little cramp in the trap, the throwing shoulder.
Because he only got 11 hours of sleep versus what he usually does, which is 13 to 14. So those of you waking up now at 8 a.m. to catch the morning show, you might be relating, but Dan gets up at 6 every day because that's when the Fan Morning Show starts. I was going to say, he's a grinder, listens to us. But if you're not, if you're going to work today, you feel a little sluggish, just tell your boss you only got 11 hours of sleep and that's why you couldn't get onto Slack fast enough to respond to his messages, okay? That's a built-in excuse.
And there are more follow-ups, right? Like, why didn't he get the 14 hours?
What was he doing?
Was he out late in New York?
It's the city that never sleeps.
Exactly.
Justin.
Is that the problem? Was there like an alarm? Did a Yankee fan disrupt his sleep in the hotel room in soccer? Like, what happened to Kikuchi's sleep, and how does he achieve such sleep? I need more answers. I need this to last us for the next 2 weeks and the balance of the regular season.
Well, speaking of no sleep, NHL plays in Australia on Friday.
I hate these, by the way.
Really? It's Australia. Like, it's the first time they've gone to the Southern Hemisphere.
I do like the idea of going to Australia. What I don't like is the regular season starting. Like, is it a regular season game?
No.
I guess I should.
It's a preseason game.
Okay, that's fine.
They can start the regular season now.
They started the regular season in Sweden last year, did they not?
Yeah, but not in
They started
September
the regular season
20th.
In China before, I believe.
This is a preseason game.
Okay, then I'm all right with it.
As far as I am understanding,
do your research, Justin.
It is preseason between the Coyotes and Kings, and they're in Melbourne, and it's going to be pretty cool. It's different. I think they're playing at where the Australian Open is for one of the games, but first time they've ever gone to the Southern Hemisphere. So it's a pretty cool thing. But yeah, timeline wise, you might be watching in the middle of the night, not getting 14 hours of sleep. Greg Wyshynski will join us, senior NHL writer at ESPN, just around the corner. They just did a wonderful roundtable discussion with some of the players at the media tour that's up on ESPN, asking some of the superstars which teams they have on their watch list and what rules they might want to add one day to the NHL. Some interesting answers there, some that we probably would agree with and some that I don't think will ever happen. We'll talk to Greg Wyshynski after the break, and you can send your Wake and Rake picks in at 590-590, Jays and Yankees with Gausman on the mound tonight, so maybe that helps with your selections. All that to come on the Fan Morning Show.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Leafs Media Day underway in about 1 hour. You can catch that on our alternate stream at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can check that out online. We will have John Tavares, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Morgan Riley at the podium, GM Brad, Trey Living, and Sheldon Keefe will all speak. We'll have that live on our station. And then afterwards, Jesse Rubinoff and Sam McKee will break it all down on Sportsnet today beginning at noon. So lots of questions to be answered, hopefully. All hockey players are. Good offseason. Lots of golf with the boys.
And apparently no William Nylander, according to our Luke Fox, which is like needlessly adding drama, isn't it?
Like, you know what he was going to say.
It's media day. He's one of the best four players on the team. I feel like, yeah, everyone wants to talk to him and you're holding him out. That doesn't make any sense to me, but whatever.
We'll get to the bottom of
it. We'll get to him eventually.
Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer at ESPN. Hockey is starting up. It's like back to school. Greg, how are you feeling with the upcoming drama to be unfolding?
I mean, my goodness, the drama's already been unfolding, hasn't it? I mean, I feel like my season started like last Tuesday. Not only with the Babcock stuff, but also with the media tour in Vegas. But no, it's good to get back to it. I'm sitting down doing my bold predictions for my column on Thursday, and I realized I I don't know if I have any. Like, it's hard really to sit down and figure out exactly what's going to go on because there's a lot of question marks right now.
Yeah, I guess bold predictions. I feel like for the Maple Leafs, we kind of know what to predict for them, right? They're going to be a good regular season team. They've got some of the best talent in the world. They have the same head coach. They have a new GM, so we'll wonder how that plays out. But it's seemingly like not a lot of storylines coming into today. I know when we head down to media day, we'll always find something to ask about. But I guess if we start with the Maple Leafs, what are your big pondering thoughts other than what is going to happen with William Nylander, maybe him playing center this year?
Well, you know, I guess it does start with Sheldon Keefe a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, you know, the idea that it's not common that a new GM comes in such a dramatic way and the coach is a holdover and remains in the gig, right? So, like, whether it's the regular season, the postseason, the off season, I think that there's generally a question of when does Brad Treliving bring his guy in? Now, obviously, like, on ice results can help to change the trajectory of any of those decisions. But like, if they hit a bump in the road, if they're like maybe a little bit more wild cardy than top of the division-y, like, it would be interesting to see exactly what that means for Sheldon.
Yeah, as it relates to Sheldon, it's interesting, I guess, all of management, you know, beyond like who Brad Treliving has brought in. But when we're talking about like how things might be different, it's almost a commentary on Kyle Dubas more than anything else. Like, we're talking about, hey, is Sheldon Keefe going to be a little bit more open with criticizing his players? Is he going to be able to be more of himself if that is truly something that was inhibited before? And really, all that says is something about Kyle Dubas, which is interesting. But yeah, I mean, Sheldon Keefe, his process, how it all looks and feels is something that is, I guess, most interesting because it was a reset without things really changing. And for that reason, I think it's kind of the same. Like, it's hard to really dig into this Leafs season because we need something to start with. We need a starting point, and I think that starting point will be provided in some ways. Today, I want to go back to Mike Babcock with you because obviously it's the biggest story in hockey leading into the season. And there are a lot of things to sort of take from it. Like, there's a lot of ways you could go when looking at this story and looking at takeaways and things that might be relevant as we spin it forward. So when you look at this story as a whole and you look at like how it might impact stories to come, what is your primary takeaway?
Well, it's the big picture thing for me since the beginning of this has been kind of how it played out, which is to talk about the systems that are in place to prevent someone like Mike Babcock from abusing his power and the systems that weren't used to try to remedy it. By that, I mean, the NHLPA did a hell of a job here. Like, they went to Columbus, they interviewed the players. They are the ones that really got the ball rolling to affect change by doing this investigation. And I've heard from a few players this week that were really impressed with the job that Marty Walsh did, kind of a calling card moment, I think, for his time as executive director. That being said, these young players that Babcock put in an awkward situation did not go to the PA. They sent the text message to Paul Bissonnette, right? So, like, the PA, the function of the PA is to help the players in these situations. The players didn't go to them first. The players didn't go to Boone Jenner. He clearly was kind of caught in the situation as someone who almost defended the things that Babcock did because he had to put out a statement regarding it because he's the team captain. They didn't go to Jarmo Kekalainen for a lot of different reasons. They didn't go to whatever the hell that whistleblower hotline the NHL established is. They didn't go there either. Okay, so for me, the story is when we talk about people like Babcock and bullying and abuse of power and the people that are behind the bench that probably shouldn't be there, we have all these systems and mechanisms to remedy that, but none of them were really used until the accusations became public through a podcast. And so that, to me, that's the big takeaway, is that if we want to prevent this kind of thing from happening in the future, we've got to make sure that these guys know that they can use the tools that are at their disposal, or else, you know, sometimes maybe nothing goes reported.
Yeah, hopefully we're leaving that one in the past. And the Blue Jackets, at least, they're starting fresh on their media day as well. And just, I'm sure they'll field a couple questions, but time to move on. I know you said that your media day kind of started a little bit during the media tour at in Vegas. You had a great article up on ESPN with your roundtable chats. I liked a lot of it. The rules to add, we'll go through some of those, but I really like that Matthew Tkachuk seems to be embracing the heel. Asked about which team he wants to watch, says, Boston, I'd like to see how they follow that one up. I think we have a lot to learn about Matthew Tkachuk still. I think last year was clearly his breakout season in terms of media coverage. He was on GQ. He was doing everything. But this season ahead, more eyes on him, and I think for the better.
Yeah, wasn't that awesome? and he knew exactly what he was saying there, too. The Panthers are one of those teams that I'm having a problem trying to figure out. And by that, I mean the Atlantic Division is clearly set up for someone to rise up and someone to fall. I don't think the Bruins are going to fall. I still think they're good enough to make the playoffs, even if they have a real problem at the center position. And obviously, I think the Leafs are going to make the playoffs. I look at the Panthers and say to myself, well, they don't have Montour and they don't have Ekblad for a good portion of the beginning of the season. But they do have some replacements on the blue line that could maybe steady the ship until they get back. And then they also have Matthew Tkachuk, who has proven himself to be a Hart Trophy quality type performer who might be able to drag this team into contention even as they heal up from injuries. And then you look at the Lightning, and that's the one I'm struggling with. The Lightning are the one I'm struggling with. At some point, you lose enough talent from your lineup and your stars age out a little bit, and it all comes together in one season, and then that's when you miss. And if you take a critical look at the Lightning's lineup, it's not that good. They've got the high-end talent that can carry them. I mean, my God, Nikita Kucherov could put a team on his back for 2 weeks and make the playoffs on his own. And same thing with Vasilevsky. But, when you start to think about all of those role players that have left, whether it's Palat or Kalorn or any of these guys that have been there for the thick and thin of it and Stanley Cup runs that aren't there now. I mean, it could be the year that the Lightning are the ones that fall out to open the door for your Ottawas or your Buffaloes.
Yeah, Ottawa and Buffalo, popular answers from the other players, Leafs, New Jersey, Pittsburgh, and Detroit. I think it's mostly the young teams with expectations that are to at least make a shot at a playoff spot. A fun teams for fans, I think, to get back on board with their teams and their fan base. But Pittsburgh for me is an interesting one because obviously we know the new Kyle Dubas era has come and he's taken some big swings. But hearing and seeing Sid with the salt and pepper hair now, picks with Bedard, I'm a little bit reflective and nostalgic about the young Sidney Crosby. But I think if anything, this Pittsburgh team is making one hard last chance, last dance effort to make this year a big one.
I mean, Sid and Ovi, right? Mm-hmm. Two gray hairs, but they're like the two guys in the balcony on the Muppet Show now. I don't know what they'll happen, right? But it's stately on Sid, by the way. It looks great.
Yeah, it looks good.
They're a very interesting team in the sense that, I don't know if we really understand what the effect Carlson's going to have on this team quite yet. We can assume that it's going to be good news for Letang because it's going to make him not have to skate 25 minutes a night in theory. And maybe that'll help preserve him and help make him a more effective player throughout the entirety of the season. What is Carlson going to be? Is he going to be the guy that just was a freewheeling, trying to hit 100 points defenseman with San Jose last year? Or is he going to have to play a little more defense under Mike Sullivan? What does the bottom six look like? I think the goaltending should be fine. Tristan Jarry is a fine regular season goalie for the most part. But what does the rest of that lineup really look like is going to determine what the Penguins do or do not do. And I tend to believe they've got another one in them, run. And I think Carlson is going to have a huge impact to that end. But again, it's in true Penguins fashion, it's never really about what Sid and Gino and Letang and the other high-end stars in the team are doing. It's usually about what the grunts aren't doing, and there's still some question marks there.
Chatting with Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. So your roundtable chat, as I mentioned, had a couple questions about rules to add. Now, you did talk to Crosby, who said bringing the red line back would be an interesting one. Some of them were a little far-fetched, like Trouba with no salary cap, Thompson with no goal for kicks. That was an interesting one. No dress code on game days by Keller, but I wonder if there was one specifically, and I know maybe Jeff Merrick listening, you guys would agree on one of them, that actually could be something that if the players bandied around and said, if we really want a change in this one specific realm, could actually make some headway.
Well, I mean, Merrick's eyes probably shot open when he saw the Tage Thompson part, because mm-hmm. he and I have discussed many, many times on the podcast, on the radio show, about allowing kicked goals, because it is a skill. I mean, if you can kick a puck to your teammate as a pass,
why can't you kick the puck into the net? The one that has me intrigued is the one that's kind of being tested out on an international level in some IIHF tournaments, which is the idea of tinkering with the power play. Mm-hmm. You score a shorthanded goal, power play's over. If you score on the power play, you can keep scoring for the full 2 minutes. Like, those types of things, for me, are things that the players are interested in, and also kind of speak to this idea of, you know, even though we're at the highest offensive level since we were since the mid-1990s, you can still get more goals in this game. And a way that you could do that, obviously, is give Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl a full 2 minutes to score as many goals as possible. Or you score a goal and try to prevent that from happening. I think it would really create a lot more offense. It would create a lot more excitement on the power play and the kill. You'd see the power kill being done by many, many other teams in an effort to try to end the power play before it begins. So some of the players mentioned that, and I think that's a really intriguing thing. And I wonder if eventually it might get traction in the NHL.
Yeah, that's a fascinating one. I mean, it would obviously add goals to the game. Like, immediately there would be an uptick. I don't know how big, but there would be an uptick. But it also would change the way teams build teams, right? Like, if you know your power play has to be great, if you know that that's the biggest or the easiest way to create an advantage in the game by just having a lethal power play that can score not once but twice every now and then when given a man advantage, I mean, I think it would change the way teams want to build and put more emphasis on offense, and that in turn would actually improve even strength. So I feel like it would all be positive in that sense. But every time they make a rule in the NHL, there always is an unnecessary side effect that sometimes goes a little bit awry. Last one for you, Greg. The Devils, lot of preseason hype. How are you reconciling with that hype? Are you all in, bought into everything that they're doing, or is it a little bit, concern over all the attention that this team is getting preseason?
I'm trying not to pick them to win the cup because of the ramifications for my personal life and having everybody call me a homer for the next 6 months. But dude, they're stacked. I mean, like, their blue line took a sneaky hit with Severson leaving. Like, I think, you know, yeah, granted, Luke Hughes, now that he gets a spot on that blue line, he's going to be great. But they lost a guy that I think did a lot of little things for them in ways that maybe the fans in Jersey didn't appreciate. And, you know, but up front, they're stacked. I love the Toffoli ad. I think when you look at what happened to the Devils in the playoffs last year, it was the lack of that one goal in a critical time against the Carolina Hurricanes that could have, you know, shifted the series. And so I think in the case of Toffoli, that's a really smart ad. And like everybody else, I wonder about the goaltending. I know that people are very high. I've seen on Akira Schmid kind of ascending to the starting role at some point during the season. I could see that happening, but even if that happens, is the goaltending good enough to win a cup is the real question. So look, they're stacked. They got a really good, harsh education in the playoffs last year. And it wouldn't surprise me to see them go all the way. But then the ultimate question, I guess, is like, is their current style of play tenable to winning in the playoffs? And that really is a question they're going to have to answer for themselves. And a question to other teams in the past about answer for themselves, too, like the Tampa Bay Lightning, for example, and modulating the way they played a little bit after some playoff disappointments. So we'll see what happens, but the talent's all there.
Yeah, invariably questions, but they're in a good spot. And let's say they learn something about themselves or want to improve in one area, it feels like that's a team that's going to have the flexibility to do so. So they're definitely, when looking at the other elites in the Eastern Conference, in an advantageous position. Greg, we appreciate the time this morning. We appreciate the fodder that the latest ESPN column mm-hmm. gave us with a lot of interesting things to dig into. And we will definitely do this again, hopefully before the start of the regular season.
You got it. Anytime. Thanks.
That's ESPN's Greg Wyshynski.
Okay, so there was a couple of rules I wanted to bring up quickly. Just yes or no. Morrissey, goal doesn't end when you score in a power play. I mean, power play doesn't end when you score.
Yes, 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 okay. 100 times.
Crosby, bring the red line back.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how it would affect the game. I don't.
Well, mark you down as undecided. Jarvis, interviewing refs after games. Yes.
Sure.
Johnny Gaudreau, no shootouts, just extended 3-on-3 until the end.
Yes.
Eichel, in a similar frame, saying just longer overtimes.
I like the, it's as long as it has to go. I don't want longer than shootout because that's the worst case.
Got it. Keller, no dress code on game days. I kind of already feel like they're starting to tiptoe into being more individualistic.
It can be more relaxed.
How about relax? But you got to have a dress. You're not wearing like you know, your pajamas, like a onesie.
I'm old school. I like the suits.
Yeah, I think it's professional. Forsberg, get rid of back-to-backs. I like that one.
Yes.
I really like that one. Thompson, no goal for kicks.
I'm down for that. Oh, wait, no goals for kicks.
Yes.
Yes.
Like the no goal rule for kicks.
Oh, for
like,
kicking
get rid
it,
of that,
yeah. I think you should be able to kick it in.
And Trouba, no salary cap.
I mean, in a perfect world.
I think that would be great.
We don't live in a perfect world, though.
Oh, boy. I'm sure that some of these will continue to be talked about every single offseason. But maybe the power play thing that's happening with the IIHF starts to tiptoe into the
NHL. I also love the flip side of that. If you score shorthanded,
yeah,
and it's
done.
Like, what a moment that would be, right?
The
like
power play,
it's,
I think
it's
so.
Obviously shorthanded goal is big for vibes anyway, but like stopping a team like the Oilers in their tracks when they think they're going to pot two on you, like it would be, it's, I feel like that is a nice little wrinkle to a rule that can be improved in multiple ways.
Captain John Tavares had one, birthday boy Captain John Tavares. In the offensive zone on faceoff, the offensive player has the advantage and gets to go down second.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it should be.
Yeah, he was complaining that you should, yeah. Anyway.
Is it home and away? Is that how it goes now?
I kind of forget the exact wording of the rule.
Yeah, I mean, anything that it gives advantages to the offensive team is what they should be focusing on.
All right. We'll submit our own. See if anybody listens to us at a round table. Okay, let's do a Wake and Rake and wrap up our show.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
Okay, Blue Jays on a little heater, as they say. A big 7-1 win yesterday at the Bronx, at the Sleepy Bronx. And our guy, Kevin Gausman, on the mound tonight. You've been a little down on Kevin Gausman as of late. You're
alone. I'm just following a game log, you know?
Following a game log.
Following the stats.
All right. Well, Kevin Gausman maybe looking for a bounce back to shut Justin Cuthbert up. What do you think of that?
I mean, I love Gausman tonight. I would have went with the -115 on the Blue Jays. Spoiler, someone mm-hmm. will be going that route. I do think the advantage lies with them. Michael King's been good for the Yankees, good numbers. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm following the stats. But it's a depressed total with Gausman on the mound, and he's been giving up runs like pretty much exclusively, with the exception of one start here of late. And I kind of expect the Yankees to get a couple, and it's down to 7.5 plus money on the over. I'm going to take the over maybe 8 or 9 runs in today's game. Gausman gets tagged for a few, but the Blue Jays offense keeps rolling because it is apathetic. Ooh. At Yankee Stadium.
Okay, well, if you're going over 7.5, I'll make this the same game parlay with the Blue Jays on the money line. They're the better team.
There's a spoiler.
They're the better team. They're riding the momentum. The Yankees seem like they've thrown in the towel for this season, and the Blue Jays have something to play for. So, love Jays on the money line tonight. Let's go through some of our submissions. We've got Corey from Port Hope here. Good morning. For my Wake and Rake pick, I love Jays money line. That's it. It's hard not to take them with Gausman on the mound and bullpen arms like Romano, Swanson, and Meza, who have 2 days of rest. Okay, maybe you're overlooking a little bad now. Wake and Rake pick, Mariners run line. No worries. Mariners will be up plenty before Kirby hits 90 pitches and needs to be pulled. Felipe Keswick.
Demands to be pulled.
Tom from Barrie says, Biggio home run. I'd like that. It'd be spicy to add to the parlay. Good morning, sunshine. Oh, take Aaron Judge to hit the
it's
ball.
Plural. Sunshines.
There's no S there. Just one sunshine, Justin. Take Aaron Judge to hit the ball out of the park. He has 6 extra base hits, including 3 home runs versus Gausman. That's Frankie and Woodbridge. Uh-oh.
There you go. That's some good insight. That goes to the over.
There you go. Good morning, Ailish and Justin. Eric, Big E in Burlington. He likes the Jays -1.5, Braves and Phillies over 9.5, and Twins plus money over the Reds. Have a great day.
Okay.
Give me Gausman over 7.5 Ks. High number, but the Yankees can't hit breaking balls, and I'm trying to have a good start for him into existence.
John, doesn't correlate with the over, but maybe that's a good bet.
John in Mississauga. The Eric from Burlington. Good morning. Next time we bet Kikuchi, I need his sleep stats beforehand. I agree. Hope Sleeping Beauty had a wonderful slumber last night. No more of that 11 hours crap. I know, right? Pathetic 11 hours.
I wonder if his stats are like, hey, you say you're getting, like his Apple Watch or whatever, you're getting too much sleep.
Maybe. He goes, anyway, for my pick tonight, I'm taking over 8.5 in the Rangers and Red Sox game. Both teams' bullpens find a way to blow it. Ken on the 400. Sorry, guys. I cost us a Wake and Rake yesterday by one lousy run. It's all right, Ken. But today's submission is a lock. Been very lucrative for me. Altuve over 1.5 bases. I mean, it's pretty much a lock. I don't blame him. Brandon from Keswick went 3-1 yesterday. Today, likes the Jays, Yankees, no run first inning. Justin, nobody thinks that there's going to be any runs tonight. I'm a little worried. Rays -1.5, and Angels are a mess. Braves -1.5 gives +677.
Got any preferences? The over in Rangers Red Sox stands out a little bit. I mean, those two teams are kind of
sloppy.
It just, I watched a little bit of last night. I don't even know if it hit the over. I guess it did.
Do we need the Mariners to win? Let's think Blue Jays parlay. Mariners run line is an option for Philippe.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a little happiness hedge territory.
Okay.
I think if I'm fine with that. I think the Mariners are in a good spot tonight.
They're playing the Oakland Athletics.
It's probably a safe pick.
At 3 p.m.
There
will be
pick.
Probably nobody in attendance at 3 p.m. It would be a noon game over there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe some Mariners fans. I think it's that or the over Rangers Red Sox. Let's pick it. Quick.
Okay. Over Rangers Red Sox. Let's bet for runs. Put that together. Over in the Rangers Red Sox, Blue Jays money line, and over in the Blue Jays as well. That gets to 474.
All righty. Let's do it.
Yeah. Actually, I get 592 when I parlay that bad boy up.
Okay.
Awesome.
That's even better.
Okay. That's your wake and rake today. Before we sign off, Justin and I actually wanted to share some programming news. It's our final week on the Fan Morning Show. Friday will be our final sign-off from the morning. We'll have more info to come today on the Fan590 Twitter account, so stay tuned for that. A little bittersweet for us. I mean, I've been here for 2 years in this spot, and I have absolutely loved connecting with the fans every morning. You know, the text line are like my real best friends.
Yes, that is a fact.
I really appreciate that we have people that first thing they want to do in the morning is turn us on and listen to us talk about the last night of sports. It's been a real privilege to sit here and to have this role.
Yeah, I'll speak for you. We love doing this. We've loved doing this. This has been so much fun. It's beyond anything that I thought I was going to do when I started in this industry. Being on this show, doing this in this time slot, it means so much. And we're really excited about what we're doing next.
That's right.
We're going to be on the station. You'll learn a bit more about that later on today. But don't want to leave without saying, or at least announce this without saying, how much we appreciated giving you our insights and connecting with our guests in this time slot. It was so much fun doing it and doing it with you over the last year.
And of course, Justin, thank you.
Toronto sports fans have been listening to you for 2 years, and it's that's why there's a little emotion connected to
it. We got some really great listeners in the morning, some great guests that we've had every morning consecutively, week after week. We have a great connection of people that get up early and they grind with us. So we really appreciate that. We love you guys. As we said, we got some exciting news to share. So Friday will be our last show on the Fan Morning Show, but take a look at the Fan 590 Twitter account a little bit later this morning for more news on everything going on.
Yeah, definitely stay tuned, because you'll find out soon enough. But also let us know, because we got two shows left.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to hear? Should we bring back like one of our staples? Should we be doing like a leaf
Justin?
Tarot reading? Should we be doing one last tenable, untenable, even though that didn't light the world on fire? Unfortunately, but I mean, we've got
we'll
to have some sort of discussion about what we got planned for the last 2 days, and they're going to be a lot of fun, and we look forward to doing those shows as well.
Yeah, we already get some very sweet texts in. It's Giacomo's 50th birthday today as well, so we got to say happy birthday to you.
I know Giacomo loves us, so maybe tough news for
him. He did say no way, but happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Justin's dad, Chris Cuthbert, of course. All right.
And we got to hit one more wake and rake, so we got three more chances.
I agree, actually.
We got to get one before.
That is a must do. A must do is hit a wake and rake.
We have to do that.
Okay, so before we sign off for today, just a reminder that Leafs Media Day begins at 9:30 on our station as well. There's an alternative stream. If you've never found it, you go to sportsnet.ca/590 and you'll see the option for the alt stream. JD Bunkus Show and Jays Talk Plus will be in their regular slots on the original stream. But you can go to our alternate stream to hear John Tavares, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Morgan Riley, Brad Trey Living, and Sheldon Keefe all talking at Media Day. And then afterwards, stay on Sportsnet 590 for in-depth reaction with Jesse Rubinoff, Sam McKee on Sportsnet Today. That will be beginning at noon. So lots to come. And we're excited for the rest of this week with all of our loyal listeners. Maybe we'll take some phone calls Friday. That was an opportunity from Giacomo.
That's a good idea.
But we love you guys. We'll be back tomorrow morning to break down, hopefully, a big Blue Jays win in the Bronx.